Question for you is, how did you move up in the Civil Air?
The physical training or PT, you have to, based on your age.
About your interest in aviation.
On there, and I just wanted to join after.
And going on to the website, and I've gone on to the website myself, there's a great deal of information. Other than aviation, what else caught your eye that said to you that this was something that you really wanted to do?
The leadership aspect and everything that I could learn from it.
And Lucas, the area of leadership, you're a 10th grader at Elkhorn Area High School. Have you been in your years in school already, elementary, middle school, now high school, have you been involved in any clubs and activities at the either the high school level or at the lower grades?
I am in a club right now. I'm in Hope Squad right now, and then I do two sports.
And those sports are?
Cross country and tennis.
And Juniper, you're in eighth grade. What activities or clubs have you been involved
in? Activities outside of school. I've been in like a bunch of choir activities, like musicals, and I'm going to be doing a musical soon for my school.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting about the CAP, and I've always had an interest in it and been aware of it. This is a question for you, Lucas. When you think about the history of the CAP, all the things that it does, emergency services, aerospace education, and cadet programs, why do you think it's so important that the CAP has lasted so long?
It's important because now we know what to do and have experience with the different things.
And Juniper, why do you think, in addition to what Lucas just said, why do you think the CAP is so important? And not just exactly what encampment is and some of the things that you did.
Encampment is where you go up to Volk Air Force Base and you spend a week there and you basically, you do exactly what you're told. And, like, it's a very fun experience. And, like, you get to do ATREF, which is airsoft guns. You get to do drill. You learn a lot. And you get to meet people from around Wisconsin.
And I'll ask the same question of you, Lucas. Of all the things that you have done in the 3 years or so that you've been in the Civil Air Patrol, what's one thing that really sticks out in your mind?
Probably EAA.
Okay, talk about that. I think we're all aware of it here in Wisconsin.
The ground at Appleton, and it's really fun there because we get to socialize with other cadets. It's not too strict, but you're still in doing a CAP activity. It's 7 days to 8 days. Another thing about
Lucas, what do your friends say, particularly friends who are not involved in CAP, what do they say to you, Juniper, when they know that you're involved in it, or if you're talking about it to some of your friends who are not involved, what do they say to you about your involvement in CAP?
They usually ask what it is at first, because they have no idea what it is usually. And when I talk about, like, encampment or O-flights, they are interested and ask along a plane.
Now, you don't think you're crazy when you're flying a plane, do you?
No.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. And Lucas, your friends who are not involved in CAP, what kinds of things do your friends say to you?
I don't really talk about it that much, but they just kind of have a mutual respect for it because they get what I do there, and they know how I, like, volunteer hours and help out.
And the final question for both of you, first for you, Lucas, What do you want to do after high school? What are your plans at this point?
I'm not exactly sure, but along the lines of air traffic control or a commercial pilot or even a military pilot, I'm just still trying to figure that out.
So when you say military pilot, that would mean you...
Maybe.
Okay, very good. And Juniper, what are your plans at this point? You're in eighth grade now. What are some of the things that you have thought about?
My main goal right now is to get into college for bachelor's degree and to become a naval fighter pilot and hopefully, if I'm lucky enough, go to Top Gun.
I want to thank Lucas Wagner and Juniper Hogsett for being my guests here on Education Matters and talking about what it is like to be a member of the Civil Air Patrol as a student. Thank you so much to both of you. You've been listening to Education Matters here on WGTD HD. Our topic today was the Civil Air Patrol. In segment one was Region Commander Colonel Rose Hunt. We then heard a very brief clip from a documentary on the History Channel about the CAP. And in segment two, I had the chance that are part of the Civil Air Patrol Squadron based in Elkhorn, Wisconsin. For WGTD-HD and Education Matters, I'm Steve for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org. This is the weekly test of the emergency alert system on WGTD 91.1 FM, Kenosha, Racine, news and classical music on your gateway to public radio. This is only a test. This concludes the weekly test of the emergency alert system on WGTD 91.1 FM, Kenosha, Racine, your gateway to public radio.
This is WGTD HD serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education librarian at the Kenosha Public Library, who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot. Now, here's today's program.
Arts Board came into being. The Arts Board resides under the umbrella of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. In the interest of full disclosure, I am an appointed member of the WAB. Our guests today are George Zugras, who is the executive program. Let's begin by talking about exactly what the Wisconsin Arts Board is, because I know there are a lot of arts organizations throughout the state, but what do you do?
We do so many things, and there are 56 of us across the nation. So the 50 states, the territories from Puerto Rico to Guam, and the District of Columbia. So, and each one of those has, you might even think of it as a mini national endowment. So we all do a couple of things. We make grants, we work with our constituents across the state to help them do what they'd like to do better by providing information, technical assistance, and just being here for them when they call and they say, I'm thinking of doing, or I'm having trouble doing, we're there to answer some questions.
You know, you mentioned there are 56 of you across the country, that means you have a certain definition of what you are, if there are only, you know, one per state, basically. So what makes you different from other arts organizations?
That's a great question. So first of all, and so by being here in the governor's signature,
and we're going to get into much more detail about how that all works, but you are celebrating your 50th anniversary. That's part of the reason why we decided to talk today. But when you mentioned there are all these other organizations across the country, did they all get started around the same time, or is this something specific to Wisconsin 50 years ago?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Wisconsin was one of the last states in the nation to get a state arts agency. But what's interesting about that is there was another organization that predated the Arts Board called the Wisconsin Arts Council. And so while others started when the National Endowment started in 1965, it was 1973 when the Wisconsin Arts Board was signed into law by Governor Patrick Lucy as part of a biennial budget bill that year. And so as that happened, the Arts Board became part of state government, and the Council for the Arts became what was then known as the Wisconsin Foundation for the Arts. And that foundation used to recognize individuals, small businesses, and corporations, so the private aspect of philanthropy in the state of Wisconsin.
Jane, I'm going to chime in here and just say that one of the ways we're celebrating the 50th anniversary is that on our website, or rather on the WAB50.com website, we've developed a historic timeline. So if you want to learn more about sort of the predated piece, you can go there and it gives far more detail. I also wanted to just share that another unusual aspect of state arts agencies is that we have 15 members appointed by the governor from all over the state. So the citizens of
Wisconsin, as we talk, but that's WAB50.org?
.com.
.com. Thank you.
You're
okay. Now let's go back to creating the Arts Board. I think we all know that state government does not all of a sudden wake up one day and say, yeah, let's give this organization some structure and money. That just doesn't happen. Do you know whether there was anything back then that was really driving the need to create a Wisconsin Arts Board?
Well, besides the expression of our people, the fundamental reason was the National Endowment for the Arts wanted to give federal money to each state. But in order to do that, each state had to have a state arts agency mm-hmm. as part of the government to receive those dollars. And then, of course, to match those dollars and distribute them here in Wisconsin.
So the NEA, National Endowment for the Arts, I think people have all heard what that is. But maybe you can talk about that specific relationship between you and NEA. How does that work? How do you communicate? Are you a member of NEA, or is it a grant you have to apply for every year?
Oh, yes, we apply just like our constituents apply to us. Every so many years, we do a full application to the National Endowment for the Arts. And I think what we are together is defined by the name of the grant program, which is it's a partnership agreement that we're applying for. And that's how the states and the NEA work together. They have ideas about what they're seeing across the nation, what needs to be put into place, what people are telling them they need. And then they work with the state arts agencies on the ground. And then we, in turn, work with the local people to, for example, work at accessibility for all to arts events and that kind of thing.
Now, that's pretty interesting. Now, let's talk about the different grant programs that you support, whether it's NEA specifically co-supporting that, or if there's some other monies coming from other organizations.
Oh, thank you for clarifying. Yeah, we don't receive any funding from other organizations. We receive funding from the state legislature and from the National Endowment for the Arts, because we do not want to go out and compete with the groups that we're supporting to go after funding that they may have access to. So it's rare that we would find funding from an outside source beyond the NEA and the state legislature. But I'm happy to go over the grant programs that we have if you'd like.
Most definitely.
Okay, so the one that we're kind of immersed in right now is our general operating support grant program, essentially, which is called Creation and Presentation. And it provides grants in support of sort of artistic and artistic program in Wisconsin, the region, is sometimes statewide. And that certainly that furthers the Arts Board's community development and arts education goals. So that's the general operating support program, Creation and Presentation. We have Creative Communities Grants, which are our arts project grants. And they encourage arts education, cultural understanding, and community arts development in Wisconsin, providing support for projects that further our arts, in many cases, as do all of our grants. And then the recipients of those arts projects grants go out and make projects happen within a 12-month period. In addition, we have the Woodland Indian Arts Program, which is designed to promote and develop a foundation of cultural and economic support for traditional and contemporary Native American arts in Wisconsin. And as part of this work, we annually distribute funds from gaming compact monies to support artistic activities among Wisconsin's tribes, bands, and urban Indian communities.
Now, we had talked about the funding aspect just a couple of moments ago. So yeah. It's the gaming dollars that run through the state, and then the state reapportions it back into this program? Right. Or does it come directly from the gaming?
It comes the way that your first scenario is correct.
Okay.
Keep them coming, please. Arts Challenge Initiative is the next grant program. And that is a program that works with Wisconsin's racially diverse nonprofit arts groups that builds to build their organizational capacity and long-term sustainability. And so that program has kind of a moving deadline, but most of our grant programs have very set deadlines. We are working to move that grant program to a deadline that is the same each year in 2024. So a note, side note there. We also have the Wisconsin Regranting Program. That provides funds to 12 local arts agencies and or their partner community foundations around Wisconsin. These groups then re-grant the funds for arts-related projects in their own communities. So we grant funding, our re-granting partner matches that funding and then makes smaller grants on the local or sometimes regional level. And then finally, we have our Folk Arts Apprenticeship Program. And that is the one program that's available for individuals, a maximum of $3,500 to support respected traditional artists in teaching their skills.
Quite a few going on. And I know that we have had Racine and Kenosha area recipients of these grants, even in the short time that I had been involved. But with the re-granting program, that's pretty interesting. And I know that the Racine Arts Council is one of those 12 statewide re-granting organizations.
Yes,
can you explain
is.
How that works?
Yeah. Oh, thank you for calling that out. Yeah. So we've been working with the Racine Arts Council for a long time. So when they apply for funding, we receive the application. And unless things have changed significantly from the previous year, they know that they will receive about the same amount of funding that they did the year before. So they applied to be in the program originally in the 90s. So it's been a long-term relationship. As they apply each year, they update us on how things are going, what's working, what isn't. And the board, as it does with all of the applications, reviews the panel's recommendations. And then the board approves or denies a grant. In the regranting program, it's very rare for a grant to not be approved because of the ongoing relationship, the nature of that program. We want to make sure that the 12 regranting partners know that they can sort of count on the funds, in as much as anyone can count on anything these days, to continue forward and keep the trust that they to their local artists and arts groups for their local applications. So it's a very long-term relationship, and it's one that it benefits from an annual gathering. So usually October, November, the 12 come together and via Zoom lately, and talk about what works, what doesn't, and have a chance to really connect with peer groups that are doing similar work around the state, which is where a lot of really great learning occurs, of course.
So Jane, one of the reasons that the regranting program came to be was the understanding that people at the local level really know what's going on and may have different priorities of funding than if you were coming to the state. And then secondarily, it was important that the raising of those funds stay in community, as Karen was saying, and be distributed there. So because it's also a great way to start seeking grants. So you seek the grants at the local level first, and then as you build your chops and you build your skills as a grant maker, then you can move off to the state and other funders because you've really gotten the whole grant making or grant seeking business under your belt.
And you talk about the business of grant seeking, grant making, and I think that's one of the challenges that I have seen with local organizations and artists is, oh my gosh, the paperwork. I don't have time to even understand this. But I know you folks are pretty helpful when that happens.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky to have a great staff that will answer the phone, answer the email, get on Zoom and talk through certain things. Plus, a board that has helped us direct ourselves to making things simpler and simpler. But for example, in the Creative Communities program, Karen can tell you about how we moved from a one major process to a two-phase process.
Yeah, we realized that rather than asking applicants to just put in the time and energy and hours it takes to put an application together without a clear sense of whether the idea was competitive or not, you know, whether it had a good chance of receiving funding, we decided to do kind of a letter of intent piece. And so we added on something called a phase one application. So groups will come to us within kind of a one-page narrative and some additional boilerplate information. They will propose the project concept and assure the panel that's reviewing these letters of intent, these first phase applications, that they've connected with the community, that the project is meeting the community's needs, and that the community will be involved in the project. The panel looks at these one pagers essentially and says, and scores them. And from that, we get a sense of how many of these will really have a good chance of receiving funding, you know, if there aren't any surprises in their phase two application, or whether they're not really, the project isn't quite ready to be following year or find other resources or talk through what didn't work in terms of meeting our guidelines for that particular panel, for that particular program.
You know, ultimately, you don't have to be a professional grant writer to write a grant to the Arts Board. And Creative Communities is a perfect example of, as Karen said, do you have a good idea? Have you thought your idea all the way through? And then the narrative can be helped by a review, a draft review of staff. And also in the second phase, when it comes time to put together that budget for the project, if you've got a good idea and you've thought it through, then the budget is simply the numbers version of the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. So, but again, staff is really good about helping to guide people through that, as we would warn, with plenty of time before the deadlines.
So in Racine and Kenosha, we have a number of organizations over the years who have been successful. And maybe, you know, Karen or George, if you can talk about just, you know, very briefly, high level, what some of those organizations you've worked with have been, and if you can recall what their projects were, that's even better. But I understand I'm kind of catching you off guard with that.
Well, I think part of it is some of these organizations we work with are in creation and presentation. So it's the series of their work. And it runs from the Racine Art Museum and Racine Theater Guild and all
Society.
Say again?
The Core.
Kenosha. And so, again, all of those groups are doing the work in community and in creation and presentation. We're lucky enough to be able to support that and then take that, those re-granting dollars that are matched at the local level and distributed. And
choose between the two programs, because we can't receive applications for more than one program, generally speaking. But there's a remarkable mix of groups, and they're not all arts groups who come in with the arts project proposal. We've got Boys and Girls Clubs, we have community associations, 501c3 nonprofits that have a strong arts project, so are working with an artist or an arts group or, you know, some permutation thereof, will often fare very, very well in that arts projects program, which again is Creative Communities. And the deadline for that phase one application is toward the end of February. So we'll have information about that up on our website very shortly.
And you'll see that there's been some murals popping up around town, mm-hmm. and the Arts Board has supported those murals as well. So, yeah.
Racine Arts Council. The projects that people come to us with need to be new projects, do something new. They want to take it to another level, or they want to add a component to it that's new. That can be a new arts project that we can support for up to potentially 3 years if they apply each year and that project is strong and continues to grow, but it is not for ongoing programs.
And that is a great clarification. So we've talked quite a bit about, this was created 50 years ago in Wisconsin. There has been a fair amount of money going out to support artists and programs, organizations, making it, I would assume, a much more vital arts state. So what's the effect of that? I know there have been economic impact studies.
Well, for sure. And there are two out there on the table right now. And before we start talking economic impact studies, I think it's always important to say the arts are important because the arts are important. They're important for our humanity. And so as we get to the economics, that's just one of the ways the arts demonstrate their value. And so in talking about the economic impact studies, the Arts Board, along with six local partners, has just gotten through working with Americans for the Arts on what's called the Arts and Economic Prosperity, And this is number six. So we call it AEP6. And so what that studies is nonprofit arts organizations and their audiences. And so when we think about this, and the reason you do economic impact studies is to say, this is not a charity like Oliver Twist saying, please, sir, may we have some more, but rather it's a really important business with a tax status as nonprofit, right? That doesn't mean you're not having economic value, but you have a nonprofit status. So the total expenditures for the study in the state of Wisconsin is $933 million. $933 million. I wonder if the listeners were going to guess millions, much less almost $1 billion of economic value in the nonprofit arts and their audiences. So just to break that down for a second, the organizations spent $437 million and the audiences spent $496 million. And this is beyond the tickets, right? So this is, I went to the show, but in order to go to the show, I hired a babysitter. I filled up the tank with gas. I went out and I had a nice meal beforehand and maybe drinks afterwards. And so you start adding up what the impact was of that audience, not to mention the company, the theater company, let's say in this instance, goes off and buys wood and paint and all of this stuff. Nonprofit arts, $933 million impact on the state of Wisconsin. And just as a side note, Jane, one of the things that will come out soon is that Americans for the Arts also provides a calculator. So if a community wasn't involved in the full study, what they can do is they can put their numbers into this calculator and get a sense of, won't be as exacting as, but a sense of what their impact is.
Oh, that's very useful.
Yeah.
Well, I know in Kenosha, we've had an economic development organization, CABA, that recognizes that in order to have a vital downtown, a vital community, you need arts as part of that whole picture. And I think in a way that gets to both the aesthetics of it, quality of life, as well as the numbers.
Right. Well, and it's about the creative people, right? So what's really important these days, if you listen to economic development folks, they want to hear about how we're going to attract the young, talented workers that we need here,
right,
or retain them. And we need to do the same for the creative entrepreneurs that are going to start businesses and make things happen. Well, one of the things that's over all of those ideas is that creatives want to be near creatives. Doesn't mean that they're all artistically creative, scientifically creative, technologically creative, all these kinds of people and technology that will take them a new place and makes it a vibrant community, as you said. So it's really important that that's the case. And so the economic tools tell us that this is what happens. And you could point to communities in the state that really have gone out of their way to make themselves more and more welcoming to creative people. The challenge is, as you know, Jane, the per capita funding for the arts in Wisconsin, meaning per capita funding, per person funding for the state arts agency in Wisconsin. And it's not a story that we tell about our creative people, our artists. We've got world-class artists in this state. We have world-class organizations in this state. The work couldn't be more talented, more wonderful. But imagine there would be more of it. There would be more creatives here making exciting things happen if we were investing in the same way that they invest in the Twin Cities. And you know, what's interesting about that, when you look at the populations of the two states, pretty much the same, but it's not how the states view themselves as far as investing in this particular aspect. So the arts and creativity.
Well, and the whole creativity piece, I think is really worth focusing on. One of the things I had learned is that you were instrumental, you meaning the Wisconsin Arts Board, was instrumental in creating a science fair. So, we're talking arts here, right? So what's the connection?
So the connection, as you rightly point out, is creativity. So the Wisconsin Arts Board in 2010 went to the university and said, hey, we just learned about this thing called the World Science Fair Festival in New York, and you're building the Institute for Discovery. Wouldn't it be great, as you open this new space, that you had a similar thing here? What is a science festival? It explains science through the arts and humanities and explains the arts and humanities through the sciences. You can't get a more valuable tool to inspire people, both in STEAM, right? We believe in right. STEAM, science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math, but also in art. Why shouldn't you know the physics of sound? Why shouldn't you know the chemistry that blends the colors together that makes you understand those things? And what will it inspire in your art? So that's how we got there. And we also got there because in 2008, we did a study on the arts and creativity in education with a task force that was led by then Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton, who was the chair of the Arts Board, and then State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Libby Burmaster. And those two very powerful women didn't ask the question, are the arts important? They started with the premise that the arts are important. And what are we going to do about it in the schools, in community, et cetera? And so that task force led to a report that was announced in 2009, January of 2009, at which Sir Ken Robinson came. And hopefully your listeners have come into contact with Sir Ken, but if they haven't, they should go to TED.com and watch his TED talk called Do Schools Kill Creativity? You won't be surprised to learn that he says yes. And not because there aren't great teachers and really important and talented students, but rather because we're teaching to standardized tests and we are not expecting creativity from our students at all. And which leads us to, but in the end, Jane, you're absolutely right. It's creativity, because as we look into we don't have to look too far into the future. Let's look at 2024. Do any of us know what 2024 is going to look like? And take advantage of whatever the opportunities might be as well. It's not all gloom and doom, because we're going to create the future if we're doing the right thing, not just sitting on the sidelines waiting for the future to happen to us. So creativity is really important. And so going back to the statement I made at the front end of economic impact, creativity is really important. So that's one thing. Our kids, their education, really important. Karen said before, cultural understanding, really important. We seem to have retreated into our homes and watching things on television because of COVID. But as we emerge, we're having to build those muscles about being in community with people again. And to do that, not just in community with people who look like us, act like us, worship like us, eat like us, but everybody in our community. And so the arts have a really significant role to play in cultural understanding.
I'm just going to chime in about the Science Festival too. It began in Madison, but it has spread statewide. So just, I believe that there are a number of Science Festival activities that happened in the Racine Kenosha area for this year, in fact, last month.
And you can actually start thinking about next year.
Yes.
Because there's a very low bar for entrance. It's, I want to do something and I want to do it during the time frame of the festival. You let Madison know only because Madison's taking care of the calendar.
And when he says Madison, what he means?
That this was a Wisconsin Science Festival. So it wasn't going to be called that and simply be located in Madison. It's a Wisconsin Science Festival with events that take place all throughout the state.
You'll hear the Wisconsin idea reverberating through all of that, as it does through all of our work.
Which is a great segue to this arts, and we've been talking about arts and creativity, arts and community development, etc., is not a new concept. We make it sound like it, but actually back in the 60s, the very first application to the National Endowment for the Arts for local arts development came from Wisconsin.
Really?
A gentleman named Robert Gard and his team wrote a thing which ultimately became the Arts in the Small Community. And what the premise was, if we looked at the five communities that they studied, if there was more arts activity, did that mean something different for those communities? So it was Wausau, and it was Rhinelander, and it was not Wausau, it was Portage and Rhinelander and Waupun and Spring Green and Adams Friendship. Oh my God, I got them all for a change. Anyway, so the thing about it was, the arts in the small community sort of looked like it was all about the rural areas. And it did show, in fact, that if you had more arts activity, it made a bet just about rural areas. The premise was, wasn't it also true of urban neighborhoods, native communities, and immigrant communities? Well, you won't be surprised to learn the answer is yes. And when they did the study back in 1965, they came up with what we like to call the Christmas tree books. The Christmas tree books were called that because each one had a different color cover. And you'll now get the tie back. They were titled The Arts and Religion, The Arts and Healthcare, The Arts End. And there you see, 50 plus years ago, bordering on almost 60 years now, they were already talking about that in ways that we today are starting to talk about it again. But again, so fundamentally important. The arts are beyond economics. We're thrilled with the economics. But it's also about humanity, understanding, education, etc.
We only have a little over 3 minutes left to talk, and I do want to bring it back to the anniversary of the Arts Board, and it relates really to that creativity again, and that's the school project that the Wisconsin Arts Board has supported along with Department of Public Instruction. Can you talk about that briefly?
Yeah, Jane, what's wonderful about this project is it's the Arts Board's anniversary and it's giving the gift. Mm-hmm. We commissioned State Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton, who wrote a poem called Like the Wind, and a composer from Western Wisconsin named Erica Svano wrote a piece that incorporates the poem, music, theater, and dance, and media arts to explore Like the Wind. What do they hear in the poetry? What do they hear in the music? How do you make that a theater thing? How do you make that a dance piece? And what's going to be fun is we're asking all of the schools that take this on to send us video and pick photos of what they come back with from having done this project.
And just to do a full circle for a minute, back to Sir Ken Robinson, schools are not killing creativity in this instance. They are, we are deeply grateful to our friends at the Department of Public Instruction for really making this commissioned piece that we did happen in such an amazing way.
And so your listeners can go to WAB50.com